But Powell River was named by the captain of a ship where Dr. Powell was on while it passed this area in about 1890. Dr. Powell was famous for a number of things, but what was most important to us was his position as BC Superintendent of Indian Affairs. First, a little about the life of Dr. Israel Powell. He was born in 1836 in Colborne, Ontario. He graduated from McGill College in 1860. 2 years later, he headed west, hoping to go to New Zealand, but only got as far as Victoria, BC, where he opened a medical office in the Anglo-American Hotel. Becoming interested in local government, he was elected to the House of Assembly of Vancouver Island. At the age of 31, he was appointed chairman of the General Board of Education in Victoria. In 1872, he was made superintendent of Indian Affairs in British Columbia, and he continued in that position for 17 years. Like many of us, Powell was a cradle Anglican and became active in St. John's Church in Victoria. As head of Indian Affairs, Powell traveled around the coast of BC extensively. It was on one of his trips to survey Indian settlements that he passed by Quathet in 1880. Evidently, he recognized the industrial potential of the area and commented on it. The captain of his ship proposed that river here should be called Powell River. This seemed fitting at the time since he was such a prominent person, the first chancellor of UBC and the owner of 330 acres of land in the middle of what would later be the city of Vancouver. Later on, he arranged that a large portion of the land between Sultry Bay and Sarah Point be transferred to private persons in 1878 as part of a logging license called Lot 450. Israel Wood Powell, as the superintendent of Indian Affairs, was a somewhat controversial character, but on the whole was widely respected. Here is what was said of him in his eulogy. Early in 1873, he decided to see firsthand the territory over which he bore sway. He engaged the HM gunboat Boxer to carry him and his party up the coast to visit all possible Indian villages and settlements. On every occasion, Dr. Powell addressed the Indians, explaining the object of his visit and promising justice in their treatment. This had a salutary effect on the natives, who evinced delight at seeing their new chief. At several places, a regatta was organized by the Indians as a show of respect for Dr. Powell and his party. He was interested in everything concerning his new charges. He soon started a fight for better medical services for the Indian children. When he retired in 1888, he was able to boast that the government had established 17 Indian schools, one for each of his years in office, and that medical attention had greatly improved. In fact, in 1876, he added the office of medical superintendent to the Indians, to his already heavy load. He found his worst enemy to be the whiskey peddlers whose wares wrought havoc among the Indians. Time after time, he was called upon to settle serious disputes, but his reputation for fairness seemed to be much in favor. On his retirement, he was well satisfied with his accomplishments. Hero or villain? Here is a quote from another version of Powell's biography, written by John Lutz. More sympathetic to Native people than most of his contemporaries were, Powell supported claims to land and justice so long as they were consistent with his goal of assimilation. He was a constant critic of the provincial government's resistance to providing Aboriginal people with land and water rights and he fought for the establishment of reserves so that Indians would have a sound economic base. On the other hand, he worked to subvert communal ownership and the potlatch, a ceremony at the core of West Coast Aboriginal culture. And in 1884, he succeeded in having the Indian Act amended to outlaw potlatching. When the first prosecutions under the Act failed, Powell counseled the agents under him to dissuade Indians from potlatching, but not to prosecute. Powell's non-confrontational approach to Indian affairs headed off Aboriginal dissatisfaction with the laws and with the loss of lands. 105 years after his death, Israel Wood Powell's reputation seems to be suffering. We are living in a historical moment when statues of Confederate generals are being pulled down and many apparent heroes are believed to have had feet of clay. Just this week, protesters in Victoria pulled down a statue of Captain Cook and threw it in the water in the harbor. Captain Vancouver's statue in front of City Hall in Vancouver was covered in paint sometime on Canada Day. We, as BC Anglicans, are right in the middle of a reexamination of history, and every church denomination which operated residential schools is being reexamined. In Canada, this would be Roman Catholic Church, United Church, Anglican Church, and Baptist Church. Israel Wood Powell's greatest error seems to be that he advocated for assimilation, a policy which was generally approved by the government, society, and church. Now, in a new century, we are finally facing up to the extreme suffering this policy of assimilation through residential schools caused thousands of Aboriginal peoples in all parts of Canada. This policy is now regarded by many as cultural genocide, and for good reason. Children were taken away from their homes and families and were forbidden to speak their own language. Many children were forbidden to even visit their homes. Many children died. We find ourselves right in the middle of all this. In the past week, two BC Anglican churches were torched, one in Hazelton and one in Tofino. I have personally visited both of these churches, so I feel affected personally. As you know, several Roman Catholic churches have burned. Hundreds of unmarked graves have been located near some Roman Catholic residential schools. Now we are waiting to see if there are unmarked graves at the site of Anglican residential schools. We know it's not so black and white as to assume that there's not another side to these stories, but good news about residential schools is dwarfed by the bad news. Our own very own dear mentor and spiritual leader, the Reverend Ruth Taylor, is widely venerated in this community as a saint. She and her husband, the Reverend Herb Taylor, spent 2 years leading a residential school in Moose Factory, Ontario. Herb was the principal of the school, and Ruth was matron and teacher. In her writings, Ruth said very little about their experiences in that school, but she seemed to show no bad feelings or guilt about their time there. Here's what she wrote in her book, There's Always More. Despite the residential school system's much maligned history, it supplied a stepping stone for a generation of Native children who had to adjust in adulthood to a white man's very imperfect way of life. It certainly gave me an insight into the impact on everyone of blending different cultures, an awareness of both its benefits and its bad effect on society. We all had very much to learn. Life in residential school work was plagued on several counts by various problems: shortage of staff, shortage of resources, including money, lack of training, an isolated location, among other things. There is no greater teacher than being thrown in at the deep end of the pool. Very quickly, we had to learn many, many jobs, as life in an isolated residential school meant simply putting one's hand to whatever task came along. When I wasn't teaching, I was acting matron or nursemaid, anything that was needed. Herb was administrating, looking after cranky engines, assisting the archdeacon at church. Even during normal times in boarding school, staff, all staff, were stressed to the limit, and when such things as flu or illness swept through a community, or essential generators malfunctioned, we all worked around the clock for the best possible outcome. Just as the native children were learning, some of them struggling to learn English, so too were we struggling to learn Cree. It was very intense, often exhausting, and deeply, richly rewarding. We, the members of this church, are among the thousands of people who have benefited from living in this place, Palo River, or Tisquat. The prosperity of the community, its industrial importance, and our own presence here are partly owing to the attention and intention of Dr. Powell. A lifelong Anglican, he was very much one of us in all kinds of ways. While many people in Powell River were enriched by the presence of the mill, yet the residents of Tlaamin seldom experienced much of this enrichment. Worse, families and ways of life were horribly disrupted by policies of government, society, and church. The mill is no longer owned by Mr. McMillan or Mr. Blodell. It now belongs to some third world billionaire whose name we can never even remember. How history plays tricks on us. We here today, the people of Sliaman and all the residents of Malaspina Peninsula, are all in this situation together. We live together and none of us are going anywhere. So by all means, let's try to make the best of a good life in a lovely place, despite some genuinely tragic history. As everyone knows, we can't turn back the hands of time, so we can only look to the future with hope and faith. I want to close with this blessing from Jan Richardson's book, The Cure for Sorrow. There is no place this blessing does not long to cry out in lament, to weep its words in sorrow, to scream its lines in sacred rage, which is to say, there is no day this blessing ceases to whisper into the ear of the dying, the despairing, the terrified, which is to say, there is no moment this blessing refuses to sing itself into the heart of the hated and the hateful, the victim and the victimizer, with every last ounce of hope it has. Which is to say, there is none that can stop it, none that can hold its course, none that will still its cadence, none that will delay its rising, none that can keep it from springing forth from the mouths of us who hope, from the hands of us who act, from the hearts of us who love, from the feet of us who will not cease our stubborn, aching, marching, until this blessing has spoken its final word, until this blessing has breathed its benediction in every place, in every tongue. Peace, peace, peace. Thank you.